Welcome back to the PhD cast, and this week it's a storytelling special. As promised last week, the good people from Second City have been to PhD Towers to teach us the benefits of storytelling, what it means, how it works, and how we can all become better storytellers. The gang who took part in the course are here, as are the two people who ran it. It's a PhD cast special from PhD Australia. Thanks very much for being here. We've got one of our regulars, Stu Gurney's here.
Hello, how's it going?
Very, very good. You had a good week?
Very good, thank you.
Very good, we'll hear all about it. Also joining us are a whole load of PhD cast newbies. First up, Kate, who's one of our comms planning directors.
Hi there.
And also Mel's here.
Hello.
And you're one of our IPDs, one of our investment planning directors.
Yes.
Great to have you both here. How are you guys doing?
Yeah, good, thank you.
Had a good week.
Invigorated from our course.
Yeah. Amazing. I'm excited about hearing all about it. And special guest stars of the PhD cast, some bona fide amazing people from Second City in Chicago, Andrew Enninger and Lisa Linky.
Hooray!
Thanks!
How are you guys? How are you guys doing?
Good. Wonderful. Super energized from the week this week. Maybe a little exhausted from it too.
But just happy to be here in Sydney.
Brilliant. And you got here on Monday,
mm-hmm.
and it's Friday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How have your 5 days in this amazing city been?
Fast.
I want to move here. I want to live here.
Much better than LA, isn't it?
It is better for me.
It's like LA is more busy, squished up against a more beautiful ocean,
mm-hmm.
and has higher property value. I don't know. It's beautiful.
Everyone here jogs with their shirt off, and I'm okay with that.
Especially in Bondi.
Yes!
Yes. Well, I live there.
It's like you read my mind. Amazing. So let's talk about why you're here. So apart from to make sure you see lots of people running topless, which is which is one of the delights of this amazing city, you're here to run a storytelling course and to run a storytelling course for not just PhD, but for all of the Omnicom media agencies here across Australia and New Zealand. You guys ran it. Before we talk to you guys, let's talk to some of the guys who did the course. Stu, Mel, and Kate. What was the storytelling course in a nutshell, and how did it work? What was it all about?
Well, I'll start. Basically, it was just thinking about how we better tell stories, funnily enough. What processes, what techniques can we employ to take people from one part of a narrative to another, and how that impacts and influences our day-to-day working lives.
And how we make sure that we get our clients on board and entertain them along the way. You know, the outtake was that people generally want the best from you and want to be entertained. So presume that when you go into a presentation.
Yeah, there was lots of work around how to present and how to project well as well, which was really interesting, and also about how to condense, which I think we'll find hard to do, but it's really important.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing. So let's talk to you guys. So Andy and Lisa, you guys ran the course. Tell us a little bit about how the course came about and what were the origins of it?
Well, about a year and a half ago, we were approached by Patty Grace, who wanted to, on behalf of the Light team, wanted to design training in storytelling, specifically around award submissions.
Cool. And for anyone who doesn't know, the Light team is Omnicom Media Group's global kind of innovation and program to create great work, which goes on to be awarded and rewarded.
Mm-hmm. And so we started studying what the Light team had been learning, and they handed off a lot of their knowledge to us. We dove deep into the world of award submissions and learned what stories look like in that world. And then started to apply what we do on stage, which is create short, sharp, funny sketch comedy scenes, and the methodology that we use to create that, to the world of award submissions.
Amazing. And Lisa, how long has the course been running, and where have you been doing it?
So we have been instructing this course. The pilot was about 2 years ago, a year and a half ago-ish.
Mm-hmm.
And so far, we've been in New York a few times, LA, Chicago, Shanghai, and Sydney.
Cool. And where was the best city that you did the call?
Sydney.
Yeah. Yeah. Hands down.
Not a leading question at all.
And what's your guys' background? So you mentioned that stand-up, you've been doing some, and some improv. What's your guys' backgrounds, and what do you bring to the course from that point of view?
So before I was a full-time actor, I worked at Deloitte, which was then Deloitte & Touche, because that's how old I am. And I was in their human capital group, so I was a senior consultant in their human resources strategy group. And while I was working there during the day in Chicago at night, I was taking improv classes at the Second City I was formerly training, and I became a much better consultant overnight. So I started getting information out of my clients that my managers and my directors couldn't get, because I was very comfortable having authentic conversations and really just listening, because at the root of improvisation is excellent communication. And these workshops for me are great because it's a blend of my experience consulting, my passion around performing, and my education, because I have my MBA and my master's in human resources. So for me, I see the real connection between what we do on stage and the process we use to create stories and how it really translates. And I was happy to hear you guys say how you were going to use these methods for more than just award submissions, because that's our ultimate goal. So nailed it.
We just high five.
We did.
which is great in a podcast. So both our listeners can just close their eyes and imagine an awesome power guy, and you'll get a sense of what just happened. And Andy, what's your background, and how did you come to be doing this?
Well, I actually studied film and theater in college, and then went off and did film school in Hungary. It was very useful. It wasn't. Came back and found myself a few years later working for a small agency that had been acquired by EuroRSCG, an advertising agency, doing IT. So I was doing database design for media buyers, actually. And while I was doing that, I was sneaking off at night to Second City, taking improv classes, falling in love with it, and actually getting better at what I was doing during the day. To the point where I was eventually managing people and becoming doing more and more creative work. And then I promoted myself out to being a full-time actor. And around 2001, and haven't looked back since. I've been doing a ton of work in the corporate arena, a lot of performance around the world when I can. And combining the two has also, like Lisa, been a particular passion for me, because I can see the application. I know that improvisation was so inspiring for me. And when I came to that sort of fork in the road, whether I stayed in to the corporate side of things or if I moved into improv, it was a very difficult decision. So it's been kind of nice to bridge the gap between the two.
Cool, amazing. And let's talk about the end result of all that. Let's talk about the course. Guys, so what happened on the course? What was it like, and what did you actually do on it?
So first day was very much kind of writing structure. So we learned about how to structure a story. So there were things like breaking it down from as simple as beginning and end to beginning, middle, end, and then like the five different parts between that. So all about stating sort of what your kind of insight is and setup is up front, and then what your problems are, and then how you solve it and where you got to. So it was just really nice to kind of follow that flow, and I think that's something we can all see in everything that we do. It just gives you a nice kind of arc, as we like to call it, for your kind of your story and your challenge.
And it certainly means that if you start from that same structure in the very beginning when you're creating your presentation to then present to your client for them to become an award-winning submission, that you've got that structure and set up already in place.
And I guess for me, it kind of really landed the point that everything we do is storytelling. So I think sometimes because we work in media planning and it's very data-centric and quite implementational, we lose the narrative and the story about behind what we do. So it really, for me, reframed the fact that we actually are all storytellers. We're trying to tell different stories that are based on what the clients require from us and how our solutions are delivering against that. So that, for me, feels a really nice reframe for what we do on a day-to-day basis.
A post-analysis doesn't have to be boring.
Right. Nothing has to be boring, exactly.
And that's absolutely true. I mean, you know, for me, I think one of the biggest things was that it gave us the license to be more entertaining. You know, I have probably more of that flair style. But, you know, making any presentation interesting has to be a better way, and I think the hook in particular was a great way to get people engaged right from the get-go, even if they knew they were going to see a mind-blowingly boring post-analysis.
Not that one of those actually exists.
No.
So let me ask you all then, having done the course and been on the course, what is storytelling?
So storytelling for me, personal view, is the journey you go from one point to another, and the emotional roller coaster and where you want to take people to and from across that journey would be basically how I would describe it.
Yeah.
Anyone else?
Sure. For me, it was very much about kind of having this, I suppose, framework that you could use to actually structure something and keep it on track, and so you're not kind of going off in various directions, and so that story is consistent, and because you know what you're trying to tell people, but quite often for the audience then they don't get it, so by having this framework to follow, it kind of makes it easy for them to kind of process and take on board what you're trying to get across.
Absolutely. And then I think for me one of the biggest skills was that we tend to get too caught up in jargon and polysyllabic words, and so reducing it back to a more conversational and chatty way, you know, trying to speak to your mum and tell her what you were doing is a great way or analogy to say, right, well, that's the sort of level I need to be pitching at, just because it makes it more interesting. Not that it's dumbing it down by any means, but it just makes it more engaging and more storytelling-ish.
More memorable.
Yes.
And what about you guys? What would you say storytelling is?
I think it's that thing that I don't know if we're born with it, but we certainly learn it very early on. When we hear stories being read to us or told to us, we learn what makes a great story. It's kind of in our bones. We often just leave it at the door, though, when we go into a presentation or try to write for a corporate goal. Suddenly we lose all that stuff, and it just becomes a series of details. So for us, storytelling is just bringing back that natural joy in telling what this information means, or what it means to me, or what it means to the audience, and kind of giving it a sense of narrative. What's the context of it? What is the information? How is that organized in a kind of interesting arrangement? And how does that pull together and give resonance to everyone listening?
I agree. I think also what we know about how people learn and that they learn in stories, it's wonderful to use that to our advantage. So if you can structure it with a great setup and a great inciting moment or hook, you know that people can't turn away. So you really know that they have to finish the story, which is why we get angry when we watch a really bad movie and where we feel like our 2 hours of our life was wasted.
But we couldn't turn away.
We couldn't turn away. Right. So
you have to see the resolution.
You have to see the end of it. Or you finish a bad book, you have to know the end of it.
It's like That's eating a whole pie.
You have to do it.
Or a 1.5 litre tub of Conisseur cookies and cream ice cream.
You have to do it.
For example.
Not that you've ever done that. But I think that it's really good to know that about the human chemistry of the brain. And so we can work with our audience rather than against them. You know, I've never turned off a movie because it didn't have enough data.
Speak for yourself.
Quite often.
Speak for yourself, Linky.
Media pornography has a lot of
And do we think storytelling is changing? Is technology and the platforms we now have and the way that media is changing? Do you think that how we tell stories, and do you think stories are changing?
So I'd say storytelling isn't changing, and I think as Lisa said, it's an inherent human desire, and it's how we. I mean, going back to oral traditions, and that's how we learn as a species. So, I think that's it's integral to what we do and how we communicate. As platforms and technology evolves, then that will be the different contexts in which we tell stories. But the fundamental basics, and I guess for me, one of the key things I learned is that actually stories are not very, very complicated when you break them down.
Yeah. Mm.
And so on that really base level, regardless of whatever platform it's consumed on, it's still going to exist in that very specific structure.
Yeah, definitely. I felt like the course really simplified things, and it was all about, it doesn't matter how you kind of fancy it up, everything has this kind of 5-point step.
Yeah. So regardless of different platforms, I think, they could enhance that narrative and that journey, but they still play a role within that kind of specific structure, I'd say.
Yes. Yeah.
When you are reducing it down to that extent and really, really crystallizing the essence of it, how do you avoid things becoming formulaic? How do you avoid things becoming like, oh, I know there's going to be a big moment here. I know there's going to be
characters and hooks.
Talk about
exciting
those.
Exciting moments.
Talk about those.
So, you know, we talked a lot about having a character, or, you know, there has to be a hero in your story, there has to be a hook, there has to be a reason that you want to go on, there has to be some sort of emotional investment in why you would continue.
Even if your hero is a killer CPM.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
Especially.
Right, bring that CPM to life.
Yeah.
we've often done that here. We've often done that here. Come on.
Your CPM might be that sliming sludge that's going through Gotham City.
Yeah. And in fact, in Mel's example, she brought to life the family of bugs for Essie Johnson.
Yeah.
So.
Yes, we did. They're all going off on their holiday.
Prepare to be seeing a lot more.
I and the rest of the agency are bracing ourselves. I'll be like, oh, is that a hero?
Is that a Harry Potter terminology?
And what about for you guys? I mean, what's your take on stories and how they're changing, and how new platforms and new media are actually influencing the ways and means that we have to tell stories?
Yeah, I think about like a Vine. You know, it's a 6-second piece of media, and the best ones tell a short story. There's clearly a beginning, middle, and end, or a transformation in it. The ones that are just kind of random, meandering around 6 seconds of, you know, film are boring. But the ones that have a hook or have a reveal, some sort of story component, we love and we send to other people, I think those are the best. So I think there's ways to utilize what we know about story regardless of the platform.
The thing for me that makes a story is that transformation. Like when you, it really can be summed up. One of the things that's my favorite exercise now to put myself through when I'm writing a scene, whether it's for video or for the stage, is to think of it as a single image. What would the single image be? And if I can think of a single image, and you see this in a great photograph where there's a sense of what came before, what comes after, this moment that we're seeing is some sort of transformation between those two states. So when you see a great photograph from a master, there's a sense of transformation and a sense of story, even though it's a single frozen image. We want to know what happened or what's going to happen. And similarly, when you're talking about great work, if you talk about it simply as a few details, maybe you may lose what's actually transformed or changed. If it just becomes an execution or a tactic, but if you can put that in the context of what that meant for the consumer that's finding themselves in the middle of that execution going on, suddenly we have a story and we understand it from a different perspective. So for me, story is something changing, something shifting.
And I guess I think there's a book recent, it's been around for quite a while, called Bad Things Are Good For You, and it talks about how we've evolved, our brains are more complicated and we can actually decipher and decode more complicated narratives. And I mean, it's been at least 2 weeks since we've mentioned Game of Thrones, so we probably should do that.
Yeah,
Game of Thrones.
It has been. I think it's right. It might be more.
Is it? Well, goodness. Well, in fact, Game of Thrones is a great example of that, because they've got very complicated narratives, very in-depth characters that they try to have very complicated relationships with, all very complicated stuff, and actually from the filming point of view, taking over different narratives, so lots of different constructs and lots of different episodes. What's interesting is that you can still pare that back and look at that from a very simple story structure, and those structures still exist. So I think it's interesting to add the layer of complexity and the complication around narrative and plot, which we can increasingly decipher and actually we want, but actually take that back to its fundamentals.
I think that there's something happening where human beings are so overwhelmed with data and information and stuff that comes to them through so many different types of media at every moment, that they're craving a sense of meaning and story. And so for us, we get to travel around and work with lots of corporations, so we get to see this trend, this sort of hunger for great stories, and people who can tell stories better, and people who can be different because they can tell their stories better.
I think the other, I totally agree, and I think the other thing that is our competency is that we're always putting the focus on the audience. We're taking care of the audience. So we're not interested in making sure that the message is delivered in the way that we think it's great. We're making sure that the message is delivered in the way that the audience understands it, just like what Andy's saying. And so that combined with our gift of telling story makes it a compelling workshop, in that we keep reminding you the focus isn't on making you look great by sharing your data. It's by making sure that your simple message gets across, because you could give your audience volumes of data, but if they don't understand what you're saying, it doesn't matter.
And for me, that's like media 101 as well, media planning 101. We should always, and we do, when we think about communications, try and think about how we're communicating and interacting with the audience and the consumer. So I think we all know these things. It's just bringing those principles back to how we approach stuff and how we tell our own stories.
Yeah, definitely.
And how important is it for brands, those things that we communicate, how important is it for brands to be good storytellers? How important is it for brands to embrace storytelling?
Really important, I think. That's kind of how they're connecting with the audience, as we were saying. So, you know, if everything is kind of a story and that's what kind of makes you emotionally connect with something, then, you know, it's really important that a brand does that well, because it provides cut through, I think, from other brands in your category. At the end of the day, there's a million shampoos, but, you know, you only use one because of, you know, maybe a story that resonates with you. So I think the better brands get at doing that for their particular audience that they're trying to capture the attention of, the better.
And I think there's a definitely agree with Kate, but there's often brands and marketers misconstrue stories a bit to make them quite convoluted. So they tell the story that's not necessarily relevant for that brand, or they try and turn the marketing and piece of communication into something that doesn't sit naturally well with the story, in the genuine story of the brand. I guess a word I'm looking for is being genuine to and truthful around the product and what it delivers.
Yeah, and being really relevant to what their personality is and the audience that they're trying to.
I mean, otherwise you won't get the integration that you want. You won't get that sort of seamless, marrying of what the brand stands for and, say, the channel or the sponsorship that you're working with.
Yeah, and no one really wants to know the in-depth story of toothpaste and how that's going to emotionally enrich someone's life, but I mean, it does have a role and it plays something. So it's just playing to its strengths and making maximising those.
And which brands do we think are great storytellers?
That's a good question. What do you think, Chris?
I've thought loads about all the questions, but then you can't get one that you can't answer. And then
we weren't
on
asking.
Me.
I just thought that you'd like to include you into that.
Well, from the article we read today, so obviously Red Bull is a great storytelling brand. You know, they use a lot of their content to tell kind of stories about themselves and about, you know, fear and all the things that, you know, Red Bull stand for. So, you know, the jumping out of planes and all the rest of it. It's all kind of, you know, content which is, you know, it hooks people in, it builds up the emotion, those emotions of extreme and fear and kind of passion and daring, which, you know, is a brand personality, and they never kind of deviate from that, and they're always very consistent in how they kind of say that message. And I think in Red Bull, in everybody's mind, has a very kind of clear kind of picture of what their brand personality is. If you were to put them as a person, for example, that's what you would say about them.
Yeah, I think what's interesting for me is the extent to which, certainly over the last, say, decade, a whole tranche of brands have emerged that are almost pure story brands that are of story. If you think about something like Innocent Smoothies in the UK, or Nudie over here, the story is of the healthy little stack doing the fight against the big poppy sodas and all that. The fact that little brand done good is owned by those big corporations is totally irrelevant, because the story of the healthy little cute fruit with the bobble hat is one that we want to buy into. And I think that perhaps something like Axe or Lynx is really good as well, a brand absolutely born of a simple story that no one actually believes, but we all like the story. We like the story of the plucky guy who sprayed and got lucky. You know, we like that story, buy into that story. And I think that on a more strategic level, a brand like Intel is an amazing storyteller. They've got to be, because there's no physical product. They're essentially something that's invisible inside other machines. So Intel have had to get to a place where they can tell the stories of what happens as a result of Intel. Because the product truth is just a fast processor, which isn't perhaps the hook that they want or need. And I think Google, most recently, I think it's become an amazing storyteller.
It's so interesting, because I think that the brands that have the best and most interesting story are in many ways actually telling a consumer story, and that's what they're able to spin, and it feels like it's the brand, but that's why they're able to attract these consumers, because they've discovered something. They're able to tell that story. We look at, for example, Apple and see ourselves, or a portion of ourselves, or an aspirational portion of ourselves reflected there. Because they're telling our story, so we want to associate with it. It's a fascinating way of thinking about it.
Everybody wants to be cool and a hipster.
Going back to the point around transformation, I think it's brands that really stay true to that transformation, and quite often the ones I think resonate the strongest are ones that use kind of the cultural transformation. So Coca-Cola is a great example. So they're always trying to position themselves and rubbing up against cultural tension to give context to that brand. So happiness can only happen when you're talking about quite unhappy moments. So there's a really nice, dangerous cultural tension that brings the story, that transformation. And similarly, there's a recent ad, Chipotle, which is great. Their story is all about kind of provenance and being true to good ethics around food. And so that transformation from the world we live in to that new world, a new narrative, is great for that brand story.
And what's amazing about media right now is there's never been more diverse, more interesting platforms that we can bring to bear with media to tell those brand stories.
Definitely, but it's how you use them well, I suppose.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I think Mini is a great example that stands true to its, you know, what
heritage,
it stands for,
yeah.
And its heritage, you know, and the clever use of media channels that they've managed over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
It's interesting, because over the past couple of years that we've worked on this training, we've really fallen in love with great media stories.
Mm-hmm.
There's something so brilliant and beautiful about a great media execution. Like, that story is so interesting because it's something that is touching a person as they're moving through their life in a really just clever way. And that's what really appeals to us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think it's true. I think that the best media solutions are always very human solutions,
mm-hmm.
because the best media solutions are often very based around people,
mm-hmm.
and what we're doing and how we're doing it.
Generally, you buy a brand because you have a need, so, you know, there is always going to be that kind of link there, so there always should be that emotional story of why that brand was necessary.
And what's the one single, you've taken a lot out of it, but what would you say, including you guys, what would you say the one thing that you've taken the most out of your time with Second City this week?
So for me, I guess practically it's that story structure and trying to think about that and applying that to almost everything that we do. From a kind of philosophy point of view, we like that thought around, we talked about it quite a lot about got your back. So there's something really nice about going into something from a team point of view and thinking about that. So for me, those two things.
No, I agree completely. And I think then taking it that next step, for me, it's given me the license to make it more entertaining on that premise.
You never need a license, Mel.
that people, you know, do want to be entertained. You know, maybe not laughing out loud.
An LOL.
But certainly at a general level.
And what about you, Kate? What's one thing you've taken out of it?
Just basically, to be a bit more creative and not to be scared to push boundaries. And, you know, Andy and Lisa talked about, you know, going 100% and then pulling it back, you know, 20%. It's always easier to pull back, you know, a really big made-up idea than it is to try and bump up an idea. So.
Amazing. And what about you guys? What's one thing you've taken out of it?
I can't believe how many people jog topless here.
She may have taken a video today on a beach.
I'll own up to it. I took it.
Were you a Japanese tourist?
Nope. I was very sly American tourist.
Lascivious American.
Gorgeous man running sprints up the hill at Bondi Beach. It
Welcome to Sydney. Andy, what did you take up the course?
Well, I think that here is something that was a real theme for me over the course of the workshop was that when you're able to tell, when you're able to be yourself and just tell stories the way that you enjoy, the work becomes a lot more fun. It becomes play.
Also
that. Amazing. That's it. That's our time. And a big thank you to everyone for taking part.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That was PhD Cast. Thank you so much for joining us on the PhD Cast, Second City.
Thank you.
Amazing. And everyone have a great weekend. Thanks a lot.
Bye. Bye. Bye.